is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. Episode 371, with me recording on a Tuesday night, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. He's also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, and we have finally made it. It is week one. I know you're tired of it. I'm getting close to tired of it. The debate, what's happening, but aren't you glad that we're finally going to have real football and injury reports and roster moves and actual games being played? So Thursday night, the season begins. Bills-Rams with the Cardinals playing Sunday afternoon at home against the Kansas City Chiefs. Seth, how excited are you for the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be so nice to not have to deal with all the speculation, and we can, you know, the people that think that this team is destined to fail, now we can find out if that's true or if people are just, you know, doom and gloom because maybe they're not a Super Bowl team. Maybe not. Who knows? But, you know, I think going into the season and saying, okay, maybe we don't see them right now as a Super Bowl contender, but they're a playoff contender. I don't know if that's a bad thing because it used to be, I hope that they win 5 or 6 games this year. And so, like, I don't know.
Like, if everything goes right, they could compete for the playoffs.
Yeah, and so now it's like you kind of expect them to be competing for the playoffs and that, you know, they're a team that's going to be competing late in the season. And now it's like, well, that's, you know, that's not that good. And you're like, wait, what? So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, you and I, you know, we'll talk about tonight. We're a little, I don't want to say higher as in like, again, I don't think you or I think that they are going into the season Super Bowl contenders. Things change during the season as players improve and, you know, or, you know, not improve or get injured or different things. However, we do think that they're, you know, spoiler, we do think that they're a team that's going to compete deep into the season for a playoff.
And I'll be perfectly honest, I believe that this team has a Super Bowl ceiling because I feel the offense is that good. I think the offense, with growth from Kyler Murray, you've got a deeper skill set, you know, the deeper skill players, the receiving core, tight end, running back. They are loaded offensively. So as long as health is reasonably okay, they should be able to score points with relative ease this year. And so the defense, as long as it's not horrific, they're going to be a good team. They're going to be in position to win a lot of games. And yeah, that's kind of my thing, is that I think everyone's focusing on the wrong thing. Like, and maybe Cardinals fans don't know how to enjoy having a good thing. Having a franchise quarterback who can win games.
Well, and as you said, it puts you in a position every week to compete, yeah. And that's a unique thing.
Yeah, it is. And the roster's not perfect, but there's, you know, find me a perfect NFL roster. Even you're the champion Rams. You know, they've got a quarterback with question mark about his arm health. They're replacing players on the offensive line. They lost players in their secondary. They do have a star at every level of their defense, but one of the stars is aging. And, you know, they look different at receiver. They're definitely not a perfect team. The Bills look like The Bills look like they could run away with it this season. As long as Tom Brady's around, that roster is very talented. Aaron Rodgers keeps the entire of the AFC West looks like juggernauts. But what we're going to do in this show, episode 371, we're going to kick things off by you know, making our projections. Maybe a little bit game by game, depending on how we, each one of us goes about it. I'm going to go more of a grouping route. Then we're going to talk about some of the predictions that are out there. We're going to talk about the Jalen Thompson extension, the injuries that are on the roster right now, and then we'll look ahead to their week one matchup against the Chiefs, give our predictions, get things that we're planning on looking for. Should be a fantastic game, but season projections. I'm going to hold by what? Now, if I'm going game by game, I like to look at, rather than game by game, I like to look at the schedule in different parts. How the Cardinals do in different parts of their schedule? Not even by like first part, like first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, but if you look at how the schedules are built, so you're going to have six games in the division, so you got to look at how they're going to do in the division. How are they going to do against the AFC West, because they have four games against them? How are they going to do against the NFC South? They got four games against them. And then you have three second-place games. So you've got the games against the Eagles, the Vikings, and the Patriots. And so I kind of look at how I view those teams and how I view the Cardinals going for them. And so I want to look at the schedule and think, what do I think they're going to do? And I think that the Cardinals, on the low end, are a 9-win team. Because I think they can pretty much split. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that, like, a worst-case scenario, like a low-case scenario, is kind of splitting everything. That would mean 3-3 in the division, 2-2 against the AFC West, 2-2 against the NFC South, and then 2-1, maybe worst case scenario, going 1-2 against those second place teams, and end up 8-9. Now, you don't want to see that, but, and then you kind of, you know, whether they go 3-1 against one division, 2-1 and 3 against another. I mean, some people tell me you can't find 7 wins on that schedule. I'm like, how not? Like, I think you can get easily, you should be able to get 3 wins in the division. I think they're going to get you 4. If I'm looking at the schedule for the division, I personally think they will sweep the Seahawks and split with the Rams and the 49ers. I could also see a scenario where they sweep both the 49ers and the Seahawks and get swept by the Rams. In either case, that's 4-2 in the division. That puts them 2 games over 500. How do you see them playing out in the division themselves?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I don't see a way, barring a Kyler Murray injury, that they don't win at least 3 games in the division. And, you know, like you said, the Rams are an extremely good team. But the Cardinals went into LA and just mopped them up last year like it was nothing. And I'm not saying that would happen again.
Well, and even the game that they won in Glendale, while the Rams had control of that game, the Cardinals, I mean, Kyler Murray kept him in that game down to the stretch. Now, the playoff game was a different story. That was a disaster. But the Cardinals blew the doors off the Rams in LA and kept with them in that second game.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, is like, I'm not going to say that they're going to beat the Rams. Like, I'm not, but like, just writing it off of, oh, well, they're not going to beat the Rams at all. Like, that's a silly thing to me, and not something I agree with in any way, shape, or form. You know, when you look at it and you kind of go through the division itself, I think you look at it and you see that there are at least 3 wins, and I'm with you. I think that they win 4 games in the division. And quite frankly, with how bad Seattle is likely to be And then the question marks that the 49ers have, and then like you said, the like obviously you can say this for any team, you know. Oh, if Matthew Stafford's hurt, well, then the Rams are a different team. Yeah, you can say that for any team, including the Cardinals, right? But Matthew Stafford is dealing with an arm like similar to what Carson Palmer had, I believe, in what was it, 14?
Something like that.
When it was like a dead arm situation. And obviously, Palmer came out. They started out 9-0. It was no big deal. oh, wait. He did miss two games, right?
Before he did. He missed the Giants game, and he missed the Broncos game that they ended up losing.
Yeah, and so, because Logan Thomas had to play. And so yes. that's the whole thing. Is like, I'm not going to say that they're going to beat the Rams, but if Matt Stafford is having arm issues and ends up missing a game or something, it won't surprise me.
Right. At all. Well, and not only that, you think of how great Stafford was last year. The defense, their offensive line, they lost Andrew Whitworth, yeah. He's retired. So,
and like you said, they're a vastly different team.
If the offensive line isn't as good, it's very possible that Stafford could be more Matthew Stafford, like Lions Matthew Stafford, where he is prone to mistakes. He's still a great quarterback, but what he had last year was a magical year for him, and it's kind of what we all felt Stafford could be in the right situation. He was in the right situation, but if that offensive line, he's got the arm issue. If it could linger, and he's going to get, if he gets hit a few more times, you never know. You never know. And so that team is not perfect by any means, by any means at all. So yeah, I just think if we believe the Cardinals are a contending team, now if you believe that they're a garbage team, which some people somehow believe, maybe you don't see that, but I say 4 wins. And because this is look at the team, that the roster, there are holes, but this is a team that expects to win, did a lot of winning last year, and is unsatisfied with how the season ended. Teams like that, with any sort of resiliency and competitive spirit, tend to bounce back from that or fall apart, but I don't think that they have the type of roster that's going to fall apart, especially during the season. I think the adversity that they're facing early on actually might help them later in the year, especially if they show that they can overcome some of that early, injuries, DeAndre Hopkins suspension. Let's look at the AFC West. That's their, since they have the first two games of the season against them, that is a very, 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 very tough division. I think it's completely reasonable to think they can get 2 wins out of that. I think, while my initial, when I wrote the preview for USA Today Sports Weekly, and I had the Cardinals eking out a win over the Chiefs in week one. That was also before we knew that, well, Marcus Golden and Zach Ertz are going to be game day decisions to play, which changes things. But I still think the Raiders, especially early in the season, are beatable. I think the Chiefs are beatable. I think the Raiders are beatable. Then you get the Chargers at home, and then you get the Broncos on the road. I think it's not unreasonable to believe that they will split those four games. And I think they go 2-2 in those games, whether that's picking up a win over the Raiders next week, and then one of their two home games, and then maybe even, getting beat by a very talented Broncos team in December on the road. But I think I can wrap my head around 2 wins in the AFC West.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's tough to break down the AFC West in general. When you look at that division, you kind of hit on it. You've got a really unknown situation in Denver. We know that Russ was good at times last year. But he's what, 33 now? He'll be 34 this year. And I'm not saying he's going to go downhill or anything, but like, this is the age where quarterbacks start, you know, if they fall off, it happens now. And then it's pretty, you know, quick. So I'm interested to see how that works. Nathaniel Hackett, Edger of Avaro, their DC, like Nathaniel Hackett's their head coach, Avaro, their DC, like this is their first coaching gig. And it's not like it's going to be, you know, no, I don't mean this disrespectfully. It's not like they're coming in to coach the Cardinals after the Steve Wilks year. Like
that was a team that was, that was talented enough to be a playoff team last year, but the quarterback play was, you know.
Right. And then they fired a very veteran defensive oriented head coach to bring in a young, you know, offensive head coach. That's, I mean, it's a ballsy move, and there's a lot of unknowns to that. Obviously you talked about the Chiefs situation. Like, their offense is going to be good, man. Like, I'm just of the opinion that Mahomes is one of those guys that's kind of teammate proof on offense.
kind of. I do think, though, they might not be as explosive.
Well, my bigger question is, are they going to be as in sync in game one?
Exactly.
You know, because they have Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster that they're obviously, I'm not like super worried about, or I am worried about in the sense of we're not, you know, it sucks that we have to play them, but Kelce and Mahomes are going to do their thing. Like, it is what it is. Hopefully that's why Isaiah Simmons is, you know, going to blossom into a star this year. But, you know, is Smith-Schuster and Valdes-Scantling, are they going to be on the same page immediately with Mahomes? And then defensively, you know, they've got a lot of athletic players, but outside of Chris Jones on the defensive line, they're older on the edges, and Carlos Dunlap and Frank Clark. And then Willie Gay has not been great yet. Nick Bolton was really good last year, so, you know, we'll see how that turns out. But they're starting some question marks at corner, including a rookie in Trent McDuffie, which you would hope that the Cardinals would be able to, you know.
Yeah. And you know, they lost Tre'Davious Ward. They lost Tyrann Mathieu, which makes them, and Steve Spagnuolo defenses tend not to start the year well.
Yeah. And then you look at the Raiders, you know, obviously they added Davante Adams, but this is like a whole new.
It's, yeah, you have a new offensive system, you got a new defensive system.
And they're catching them early, which is good.
Yes, yes, that's been my thing with them, is that they're not going to be their finished product yet. Neither the Chiefs or the Raiders are going to be their finished product yet. So,
well, and
you're
going
to have to play those teams. It's perfect to play them at the beginning.
Yeah, and outside of Colton Miller, they have a ton of question marks on the offensive line. Like, a ton of question marks. They have two great receivers and a great tight end, and Davante Adams, Hunter Renfrow, and then Darren Waller. But like, they have a ton of question marks along the offensive line. So, and then their defense, I know people are super concerned about Chandler Jones coming back, but their cornerback situation might be worse off than the Cardinals, and their linebacker situation leaves a lot to be desired. And then there's stuff up the middle, like Crosby and Jones are great on the edge, but after that, I have more questions than answers. And then, you know, here's the thing. Everybody loves the Chargers. Everybody's falling in love with the Chargers. You and I both think that they're going to be a good team, but throughout the Chargers' history, they're the team that always...
It comes just a little short.
Yeah, they're the team that always... Yeah, exactly. I think that's the best way to put it. They fail to meet the expectations. You know, last year they were 9-8. They were fifth in points for, but 29th in points against. And I know that they made some, you know, additions, but
Khalil Mack and J.C. Jackson.
Yeah, Khalil Mack is older now.
Pairing with Nick Bosa, I mean Joey Bosa, that's something.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's and the thing is, like, Khalil Mack's so great, but they've had injury concerns with basically everybody on their defense. So we'll see how that kind of works out. And that's the thing. So, like, you know, I'm not going to say that again. I'm not like, oh, the Cardinals are definitely going to beat the Chargers, but like, you look at it and you're not like, oh yeah, that's a definite loss for the Cardinals. And that's how I kind of look at all of these games. Like you said, is, you know, the Cardinals, Chiefs, the Cardinals at the Raiders, the Cardinals, you know, hosting the Chargers and then going to Denver late, like you said, two wins makes a lot of sense. And if you give them four in the division, that puts them at six.
Correct.
And now all of a sudden, you know, they just need to win a game to get to that seven mark that people are like, oh, they'll be lucky if they win seven games.
And then they play the NFC South. And in the NFC South, what we know is that there's one team that really is it, or is it? There's one sure team, and that's the Bucks. And as long as Tom Brady's healthy, and let's be honest, there's some concern about that offensive line now entering this year. But then you've got three large question marks. You've got a Saints team, very, very good on defense, but you got Jameis Winston at quarterback. You've got a Panthers team that is a little bit better now with Baker Mayfield, but let's be honest, that's not a team that people expect to do much. And many believe that the Falcons are going to be one of the worst teams in the league. I think they're going to be a little bit better than that, because I think Marcus Mariota, if he's healthy, will actually keep that team fairly steady.
Well, here's my thing with Atlanta. And you know, you broke down everything else really well. Here's my thing with Atlanta. You play them week 17, so the second to last game, January 1st. I feel like they're either going to have flopped or folded up the season, as you said, if, you know, expectations of them being that bad, or they're going to be at the point where they're trying, like, they're still in it, maybe, you know, maybe they're sitting at, you know, 7-9 or 8-8, you know, and they gotta, or I guess it would be
like 7-8.
They're 7-8 or, you know, 8-7, and they're real close. I think that's my question about that game, is because they do catch them so late in the season that you could get a team that's just folded up shop. They're starting Desmond Ridder, you know, just to see what they have in him and kind of get through just to get to one more game. Or, you know, like you said, Mariota's influence has steadied them, and that puts them, you know, in a position to be, I don't want to say successful, but be competitive. So again, I go into this and I say two wins.
And I think they're going to get three wins in the South.
Spoiler alert, Jess and I don't agree on the Cardinals' record at the end of the season, but we are very close.
Yeah, I see them getting three wins, whether that is and honestly, I think when the schedule came out back in May and we did our game-by-game predictions, I think I actually had the Cardinals going 3-1 in the AFC West and 2-2 in the NFC South, because I had them losing that game in Atlanta. That's one of those, you know, road games that the Cardinals every year seem to have a road game stinker where they lose to a team they shouldn't. And that could be that team. That said, I think they're going to go 3-1 in that division, whether it is beating the Saints or losing to the Bucks, or heck, they lose to the Panthers again and then beat everyone else, but because they can't beat the Panthers. They haven't done it since 2013. But I think they get three wins in that division, because I think that the NFC South's not, it's not that great. And, yeah, and the Bucs aren't as good as they were. And the Saints are a question mark. And as I've said in other shows, in terms of what we're looking at this season, I think the division winners, you have to view them like in the NFC. The same division winners are the favorites to win their divisions. And so if you're looking at the wild card race, you've got five real teams that are going to compete, in my opinion. And that would be the Cardinals, the 49ers, the Eagles, the Vikings, and the Saints. And I think the Cardinals have the best, quarterback situation of those five teams. And they were the better team last year. And so, you know, we look at teams like the Saints. With an elite defense, do you trust Jameis Winston, one, to be healthy for the whole season and to play mistake-free? That's what we're going to see. Has he taken enough steps forward in his play to eliminate the negatives? We know he's a playmaker, but he's also a mistake maker. Can he trim those mistakes down? That said, I have them winning three games in the NFC South, which gets them to 9 wins, in my opinion. Yeah,
and I have them at 2, which puts them at 8. So that gives you your kind of miscellaneous, jumbled up group that includes the Eagles at home,
Vikings, and
the Vikings on the road, and the Patriots at home. And again, I look at those games. I'm not going to say that Vikings game, I'm just going, oh, it's on the road, I'm taking the Vikings. But I think the Cardinals match up really well with the Eagles. And I think that the Cardinals match up really well with the Patriots. And for that reason, I think that they win at least 2 of those games, because Minnesota is a good team, but I have a lot of the same question marks with Minnesota that I did about the Raiders. Or no, sorry, not the Raiders, the Broncos. That
brand new head coach
and new philosophy.
And they still have Kirk Cousins as their quarterback, who's is he good? Kind of, yeah, quarterback.
And the defensive situation is interesting to me. So Kevin O'Connell is another one of the hot shot guys, right? You look at Ed O'Donnell. He's really underachieved as a DC outside of last year in Denver. You look at it, you know, he was 25th in 2020. And then the last time he was a DC before that, he was in Atlanta from 04 to 06. So, I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, he was with the Bears as a secondary coach for 4 or 5 years. Like, I have a lot of questions about that team. This was an interesting, ballsy move by Ziggy Wilf to go to Kevin O'Connell, who I think he's like close to the same age as Kirk Cousins. And I know that doesn't matter.
Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford, or, you know.
Yeah, and we've seen Aaron Rodgers and
Matt LaFleur,
thank you. But yeah, like, they're literally like, Cousins just turned 34 and O'Connell just turned 37. So, like, you know, I don't know, man. Like, we'll see how this works out. But, like, that's why when people are just like kind of chalking that up as a loss. And I get it. I do understand that people like drastic changes and think that it instantly makes everything better. And I'm not going to, I mean, you and I aren't on the inside and don't follow the Viking situation like we do the Cardinals. But the reality is like they were in a position under Mike Zimmer where they were competing for the playoffs literally every season. And the last time they made a move like this where they fired a coach that, you know, they kind of competed with most of the time, you saw them in flux a lot. Obviously that was a long time ago and you know, we're in different situations, but I just don't, the grass is always greener thing just doesn't make sense to me. And maybe that's because I'm a Cardinals fan and it's like, I'm like, oh yeah, just fire your coach. That'll fix everything. Cause it doesn't ever work here.
It doesn't.
But like, I'm just not ready to be like, oh yeah, they're definitely going to beat the Cardinals because now they have Kevin O'Connell as their head coach. And, you know, you look at some of the, I mean, you look at what they have. I like a lot of the stuff that they have, but I'm not, I mean, they're starting Jordan Hicks. They're starting Patrick Peterson. Like, it's not like they're just starting.
Yeah, that's true. Those are defensive players the Cardinals moved on from.
And so, you know, we'll see where, if they were right or not, but you know, I just kind of look at it. And so, long-winded rant short, I see another 2 wins and that gets them to 10.
So ultimately, the both of us view that this is a team that will win double-digit games and will make the playoffs. And that's sort of my mindset for this season. And I think their floor is 7 or 8 wins. And that's floor, barring Kyler Murray. But like, if Kyler Murray is healthy, relatively healthy for the whole year, and even if they suffer big injuries elsewhere, I still think this is a 7-win team floor with a ceiling of about 13 wins. I think this is a Super Bowl ceiling team that will compete in the playoffs. I'm not going to predict if they're going to win one in the postseason, but I think they will be better prepared for the postseason than they were a season ago.
Yeah, and I think that they're looking at the faults of the previous seasons and trying to address them in that way. And that's why I would look at it. Everybody knows kind of my thing of like, barring obviously catastrophic injuries. If I say a team's going to win 10 games, I think that there's this plus minus two situation where, you know, you're looking at an 8 to 12 win team. So I usually kind of dive right in the middle there and say 10 because there are a lot of fluky things that happen in the NFL. I think that's the other thing you have to look at. I mean, we talked about it earlier, the Cardinals just going into Tennessee and LA and just jack stomping both teams. No, nobody saw that coming.
Right.
And so to just like be like, oh, this team is, you know, a 7-win team. And, you know, we'll get to it later. The fact
it was
that
a 7-win team in 7 games.
Yeah. And you know, remember the team they beat in the first game was coming off an AFC championship game loss, a close one, a nail biter. And then they had added, you know, the pieces that were going to get them over the hump. So it's always, like I said, it's always easier. And I think a lot of it comes down to Cardinals fans and Arizona sports fans in general are understandably broken after the Phoenix Suns situation the last 2 years, where they're like, and you can throw in the Cardinals, you know, faltering down the stretch in the regular season. They're like, all right, I'm not getting my hopes up. Prove it to me. Like, until you actually prove it on the floor or the court, I don't believe you.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and let's talk about some of the predictions that are out there. Why we think that they're on target or not, or what we think about them in general. Let's come to next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. We've given our predictions for the season. Both of us see double-digit wins and a playoff appearance, probably not winning the division. But there are some predictions out there. Some are less predictions as it is likely outcomes. Kyle Odegaard, formerly of azcardinals.com, now working for compare.bet. He does NFL analysis. He broke down the Cardinal season and sees them going 6-10. I'm sorry, 7-10. CBS Sports, I believe, has them at 6 wins. But in an interesting thing that I found, ESPN's FPI, their football power index, it's not a prediction, but has the Cardinals being more likely to win than lose, so greater than 50% odds of winning a game in 13 of their 17 games. And so if you're looking at the odds or likelihood that they, ESPN's football power index kind of views them as a potential 13-win team. The teams or the analysts that see the Cardinals winning, losing double-digit games, we'll say put it this way, losing double-digit games, are they looking too much at last year's team as opposed to looking at their roster right now? Or where are they getting it wrong in your opinion?
I think it's just like what I just said. It's the prove me situation. You got to remember, we were guilty of it too. A lot of people bought in that this was not just a good team, but a Super Bowl contending team. And they had that loss against the Packers, and people were like, still like, all right, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's one game, and if AJ Green turns around, they win the game, like whatever. And then, you know, they faltered, and people were like, well, I'm not buying into this team ever again. Like, they got to prove it to me. And I do get that to an extent. Like, it's tough to buy into a team that's shown you that they're not complete, or that, you know, maybe, like you said, everything has to go right for them to be a Super Bowl team. But it's the same people who are writing off the Cardinals are penciling in the Green Bay Packers as, you know, a 12 or 13 win team with,
or the 49ers winning 11, 12 games.
Yeah.
That is the one thing that puzzles me more than anything else. Especially, I get partially on the betting odds because the Niners have traditionally been a national team. So they will always have inflated odds. But let's not forget the, 8-31 record or so. 8-28, I think, is the record. 8-28. Record that Kyle Shanahan has when anyone other than Jimmy Garoppolo is starting a quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo, 31-14. Anybody else, 8-28. I'm not saying Trey Lance is going to be, but Kyle Shanahan has not proven that he can have a winning team other than with Garoppolo.
Yeah, and I mean, you just look at, like I was talking about with the Packers, like Aaron Rodgers is going from Devontae Adams to Sammy Watkins and Alan Lazard. And it's not that Alan Lazard is bad by any means. I think he's actually a good ball player.
Don't
but
forget,
like,
Romeo Doubs or Dobbs or whatever that kid is.
Right. And so, so that's my point. It's like you have just so many question marks. Their entire interior O-line is a question mark. David Bakhtiari is one of the best left tackles in the NFL and has struggled with injuries the last couple of years. And then you go to the defense, you know, they cut loose Za'Darius Smith, you know, they brought in Jerron Reed to replace one of their guys from last year. Name's escaping me. You know, they just paid Devondre Campbell just an absurd amount of money. So, I mean, you look at it, there are questions, but because, like you said, there's this national kind of love for Kyle Shanahan, rightfully so. I mean, he's been a good coach. Don't get me wrong. They get a pass, even though it hasn't been, I would say, great reports out of San Francisco with Trey Lance thus far.
And the fact that they didn't end up trading Garoppolo is I don't know.
There's
going to
be question marks the whole season.
That's going
to
be odd.
I mean, and so that's what you look at is there's just, you know, every team has questions, but it seems like if you had a preconceived notion, and I think this is a lot of the situation, is that one, nobody expected Cliff Kingsbury to succeed here, and he's unequivocally has succeeded. You know, so that's such a big deal. I mean, I literally just saw something like a hot take, like NFL, like 32 hot takes on the NFL season, one for each team. And one of the takes was that the Cardinals fire Cliff Kingsbury at the end of the year. I'm like, bro, they literally just signed him to a 5-year contract extension. Like, even if they went 1-16, they're not firing him to hire a new head coach because Bidwell is not the guy that's going to fire a head coach he just extended for 5 years.
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely. And an interesting thing, my brother was having this conversation with me, and he was saying how he's still not sure about Cliff Kingsbury as a head coach. And I'm like, how can you not be? Like you said, great offensive. Like, no, Cliff Kingsbury has more than proven his mettle when it comes to head coaching. The adjustments that he's made offensively over the last three seasons, how he manages his players, what the players say about him, the improvement in wins each year. In terms of Kingsbury as a head coach, he's more than proven that he is a capable head coach in the NFL. And even though perhaps he didn't quote unquote deserve the job he got here, he's proven that he does deserve to be in the NFL.
Right. And, you know, that's my thing is like, I get that there's a lot of negativity around this team. And I think that's the biggest thing is that there's this kind of stench of negativity amongst a lot of national writers. But it was interesting. I mean, like Peter Schrager today talked about the Cardinals were going to be the wild card team. Who was the other one? Another, I think it's on the same show. What is that? Good Morning Football?
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I swore it was one of those guys. But another national pundit had the Cardinals winning the NFC West.
That's a possibility. I don't think it's a probability, but I see, and that's where we bring in the
Jason McCourty. That's who it was.
And that's where we bring in like that the ESPN FPI. And I wrote that piece on Monday, and people have been going crazy about it. One, it wasn't my numbers. If you go through like on ESPN's team pages, you look at there for each game that there is based on their football power index, it's analytically based, however that's put together. They put a percentage likelihood of winning the game, basically your odds for winning the game. And if you look at the Cardinals' schedule, that they have a higher than 50% chance of winning 13 of their 17 games, which means essentially it's not predicting a 13-4 record, but it kind of is. It's saying that they are more likely than not to be 13-4 this next season. In 17 of their games, they are more likely to win than lose 13 of them. While I don't think that will happen, I don't see how that's crazy considering the offensive talent, considering the quarterback, and considering the potential on defense.
But that's, again, Jess, that comes back to the reality that there's a lot of people that are just not going to buy into this team. And so, and to your point from earlier, like, so I was going through because I couldn't remember who said it. So it was Jason McCourty from Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. And he had the Cardinals as the NFC West champs. He had the Rams as a wild card team. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, you're just flip-flopping a position. But Kyle Brandt on the same show had the 49ers winning the NFC West.
That's absurd in my opinion, but that's
but that's my point. Like, why is that less absurd?
Right. Yeah, like, I mean, just look at that. The 49ers, I keep saying about the 49ers. They're like Trey Lance is not Patrick Mahomes coming in year 2 taking over that starting job. No, he's not. And so Garoppolo, for the flaws that he had, made few mistakes. Trey Lance, if he can be more polished, so if he can be as mistake-free as Garoppolo, and then do the things that he can do physically that Garoppolo can't, okay. Basically, if he's, you know, Josh Allen, okay, if he can do what Josh Allen has done in Buffalo, then that's fantastic. The thing is, Trey Lance is not as polished. It never was as polished a prospect as Patrick Mahomes.
Well,
so to expect that sort of jump from him, I think is setting him up to fail.
Well, people forget this. And again, we're not calling him out by any means, but Trey Lance played in 19 games in college. 19. He had great numbers. He threw for under 3,000 yards, but 30 touchdowns and one interception.
But they didn't throw the ball much. They ran the ball all the time.
Right. He had 318 passing attempts coming out of college. To put that into perspective, Kyler Murray had 377 pass attempts in his Heisman season at Oklahoma. Patrick Mahomes had, I believe, yeah, he had 364 his sophomore year and 388 his junior year at Texas Tech. Like, even like a guy like Josh Allen, he, you know, who was much maligned and had a lot of question marks, you know, Allen had 373 throws his sophomore year. It's crazy to expect a MVP like season, which is the jump that we're discussing for Lance to make, for the 49ers to be, you know, the best team in the NFC West and a Super Bowl contending team. But you know, that's my thing. Is like you said, I think
how is it less absurd to pick the 49ers to win than to pick the Cardinals?
Right. But I think you hit it, the nail on the head. You know, you hit it right on the mark when you talked about, like, the Niners are a national team with a national fan base. The Packers are a national team with a national fan base. The Cardinals, from a fan base perspective,
they have a very small following outside of Arizona.
They're very close to, you know, like you said before, like the Falcons, like basically the NFC South. And the Saints, are the most ravenous of that group. But like, even, and this is like inside baseball stuff, but like Jess and I, you know, running sites, get the stats for all the teams. And one of the like least trafficked sites is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers sites.
It's crazy.
And it's, I mean, we're talking about a run with the greatest player of all time. And the diehard Bucs fans care, but nobody else does. Now, the difference is the Bucs have the greatest player of all time. So, like, you never bet against Tom Brady. Like, it's just...
Right. That's almost one of my mantras when it comes to making betting pick is you don't bet against Tom Brady.
Right. And so, yeah, just when it comes to that, like, it's just, that's how it kind of works. If you're not, you know, if you're the Cardinals, the Jaguars, the Texans, the Falcons, you have to sustain longevity of success before you're going to be looked at. And you look at like the Falcons Super Bowl run, you know, there were very few people picking them to go to the Super Bowl that year when they lost to the Patriots. And it's just because, you know, people were in a lull with Matt Ryan. Oh, he's, you know, a choke artist. He can't win the big game. I mean, that's the thing is, like, when you can't, when you just count people out because of one experience or, you know, that they've haven't done it immediately, then that's what happens. So
coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Jalen Thompson got a big contract extension. What does it mean? What's the deal with that? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. The news of the week last week was that of the contract extension for safety Jalen Thompson. We still don't have the specifics of the contract, but we know that it is a deal worth roughly just less than $40 million. Keeps him under contract through 2025, $24.5 million guaranteed, $10 million signing bonus this year. You know, as they talk about contracts, it puts him at like $13.3 million per year on the extension, when the reality is it's more like about, because we got to include this year, it's about $10 million per year for a guy that has been ascending. One, I think it's a fantastic deal. We'll know more about the specifics probably Wednesday or Thursday when it finally contract finally hits the book in the NFLPA. But two, is Jalen Thompson perhaps the best piece of scouting the Cardinals have done in the last 10 years?
Yeah, because you look at other players and you look at situations, right? With the first pick, you better get a great player. If you don't, you're fired. I mean, literally, that's how it works, right? If you have the first pick and you fail, you're fired. And quite frankly, the Cardinals had two no-brainers in Kyler Murray and Nick Bosa. Like, they literally couldn't have missed. The only difference would have been you would go in with Josh Rosen, who's been a bust. You know, Buda Baker, the last decade of Cardinals drafts, you know, people will say, oh, it was bad. There are situations that were bad. I agree. Tyrann Mathieu was a third round pick, but that was more off the field based, right? Like, yeah, it wasn't based on his on the field performance. Trying to think who else in the last decade.
They've had some flashes from players like late rounds.
Maybe David Johnson, but like that was such a flash in the pan too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's what the question becomes, is because, you know, if you take out your top 50 picks, you know, as in it, first 50 picks in a draft, and you say, okay, you know, I thought Marcus Golden's been a pretty good draft pick, but like, think about his second contract. It was what, a 2-year deal from the Giants, or a 3-year deal from the Giants? It's not like he got paid. You know, I tweeted out, I thought, you know, Jalen Thompson's probably their best pick of the last decade.
I remember when we were getting ready for that supplemental draft, when they drafted it, I was like, there didn't seem to be anything notable about him. He didn't have great, like, he wasn't dominant in college. He didn't have great physical traits. He did not have elite athletic traits. There was nothing wrong with him. But going into that, I was like, okay, so they got someone who is slightly undersized in terms of safety. He's not small. He's not Buda. He's not Tyrann Mathieu, but he's not a great physical safety, and he's not a great athletic corner. I was like, and he's turned into, you know, isn't he kind of a mix, for lack of a better, kind of a mix of both Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor?
Yeah, the way he plays, obviously he hasn't reach that level, but like his style of play, yes. You know, he's able to do things on the back end, and then he's able to play up top down in the box and things of that nature. You know, when you watch him play, you see a guy that is always in the right position and does a great job of putting himself in a position to continually be successful. And a lot of that is strictly because of prep. And that's what has probably been missing for the Arizona Cardinals is getting guys that love the game and kind of eat, sleep, and breathe the game, like a Jalen Thompson does, that allows him, like you said, he's not a great athlete. Like, he's not a unique athletic freak.
Take like Isaiah Simmons, for example.
Right, who's a freak of nature, like legit freak of nature from an athleticism standpoint. So, yeah, like that's the whole thing is you've got a guy that has done everything right and done everything you've asked him to do and just continues to
ascend. Like, one, he in terms of having the safety, like philosophically, he erases mistakes, and rather than giving up 70-yard plays, he limits them to 15 because he's a great tackler. He's a great pursuit guy. He hits. He's a great tackler, and also last year he showed he could make plays on the ball. He arguably should have been a Pro Bowler last year. It's hard to do when you have a Pro Bowl teammate, and it's hard when you're pretty unheralded. The contract will put him on the map, and it's kind of the same thing that happened with Buddha. Buddha got the contract. It put him on the map. He got the Pro Bowls and the recognition. And so...
Or even DJ, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And now what's kind of nice is that you've got him under contract a year past Buddha. And there were, you know, if we look back, listen back to some audio, let's go back a year, 2 years. Vance Joseph said something that he's not as good. He's not on the same level as Buddha yet. They saw potential greatness in Jalen Thompson after that first year. The way he did it. They were that excited about him, and now they're paying him like a top safety. But they're not. The thing is, they're not paying him too much, considering, and it's looks like this is a very doable deal to have both Buddha and JT covering the back end without a problem the next few years.
And then think about it. They have Byron Murphy that they're hoping takes that step. They just traded for Trayvon Mullen, who they're hoping regains his vigor of his first 2 years in the NFL. If these guys can all get signed and locked up, you're talking about a very young secondary with 3 to 4 key pieces.
Yeah,
which is unheard of.
And I want to see the breakdown. It sounds like if you've got a $10 million signing bonus. His cap hit this year was going to be about $2.5 million. I think his cap hit will go up a little because I imagine his year one salary that'll be this year will be about $1 million. He was due to make $2.5 million. They've paid him $10 million, and so he'll probably be looking at about a $3.5 million cap hit for this first year, and then it'll go up from there. But it's a very doable deal. It's a very doable deal. I don't know. Like, and that you go to the other contract extensions. You've got guys like Marcus Golden, Byron Murphy, Zach Allen. I don't think Zach Allen's going to be a kind of a candidate for that. Can we hope to see something like this from Marcus Golden or Byron Murphy in the days to come?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that you can afford to pay. I'm not sure you can afford to pay Murph what a young corner is worth at this juncture, because he hasn't shown enough. Whereas, like you said, like Jalen's very underrated by the masses. You know, playing a a position of safety where he doesn't get a lot of run because of his teammate. And then, like we talked about earlier, he plays on the Cardinals. You know, it's a difficult situation. Golden, we talked about, man, like I would have signed him or offered him, I don't know if he'd take it, like a 2-year, $25 million extension already and locked and like 18 guaranteed, like high guarantees. I'd be like, dude, we'll give you one last kind of paycheck. Even if I would even go up to 30 with him because you just have so little on the roster. but now you're putting it in a weird position because like, if you get something or you see something in Myjai Sanders and Cam Thomas, maybe you save yourself. But I wouldn't have risked it at that point.
Right. Coming up next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, of us heard Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about some of the injuries. And before we go talk about the preview, so got some injury issues in week one already. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, of us heard Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals didn't play their starters in the preseason, and yet still entering week one, they have a number of players, starters, whose availability is in question. Antonio Hamilton, cooking accident, freak accident, severe burns on his feet. He's going to be out at least 4 weeks. Other players to be concerned about who missed practice on Monday, didn't have an injury report, so that won't come out till Wednesday when you guys are listening to this show or after the injury report came out. J.J. Watt didn't practice. Marcus Golden didn't practice. Zach Ertz didn't practice. Trayvon Mullen didn't practice. What? Colt McCoy didn't practice. And it sounds like Zach Ertz and Marcus Golden are truly questionable after they haven't. If this is the same situation as it was at the beginning of August in training camp, Zach Ertz tweaked his calf. Marcus Golden dealing with a toe. So I'm guessing it's something kind of like turf toe, I'm guessing. And here we are, the first weekend in September, after the first week in September, heading into week one, and they're still not back. For me, those are the two most concerning injuries because, well, you're already down DeAndre Hopkins. The fact that you had Zach Ertz was going to be a big reason why you can weather that, in addition to the receivers, but you've got those receivers plus Zach Ertz. And then on defensive side of the ball, if your only proven pass rusher is Marcus Golden, and he's questionable to play, that is less than ideal when you go against Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and, you know, Mullen's a concern just because it came out of nowhere, and that's always concerning. You know, Golden's a concern because, as we just discussed, they don't have anybody else right now. So you're like, okay. So, you know, the Colt McCoy situation, I'm not worried about unless it extends to he's needed, right?
Of course. So, but yeah, we might be looking at a scenario where Trace McSorley is the backup quarterback on Sunday, which, as long as he's not needed, that's no big deal at all.
Right. And then, obviously, the Watt situation is always huge.
I'm not worried about because he had COVID, and I think they're just doing a natural ramp up. And Monday being the last bonus practice, that he should be ready to go by the end of the week.
I am interested in the Ertz situation because, well, I guess 6 weeks for it's only been four. Has it been four or six since he strained the calf?
About 4 weeks.
Yeah, that's not uncommon. Six is usually it. So, I mean, it's tough. It's definitely tough. And obviously, they wanted to use tight ends more. You know, we talked about the McBride pick in and of itself. So, you know, we'll see how this ends up, but it's not ideal. I mean, clearly.
So yeah, the injury wise, it's concerning. It's as simple as that. Especially when kind of the philosophy the Cardinals took for the preseason was to get their to get their starters healthy. And yet, even without practice, they got limited practice reps, didn't play in the preseason, they still managed to get hurt. It looks like Justin Pugh will probably be able to go. Cody Ford being in the lineup kind of now is makes things a little bit easier. They're able to limit Pugh's practice reps and get Ford more so that he can get more comfortable with the offense. Rondale Moore dealing with now he's day to day. I think he should be good on the practice field on Wednesday. Hopefully, that first injury report that comes out will get a better sense of kind of where things are. Which, you know, selfishly for our jobs, it would certainly be easier if teams disclosed information, but for whatever purpose that is, they're choosing to just wait till the injury report comes out. I mean, I don't get it. Does it really make that much of a difference in terms of gamesmanship? But nonetheless, Wednesday injury reports come out, we'll have a better picture as to what the injury situation actually looks like, how many guys actually miss practice, how many people are limited. And then ideally we get a mostly full team ready to face Mahomes on Sunday.
Yeah, and that's obviously what the goal is. And like you said, recording on a Tuesday makes it slightly difficult, because we don't see the first actual injury report. But it is concerning and is something to watch, because like you said, they tried to like slow play the preseason to not have to worry about this, and then obviously from a fan perspective, it's a concern on day one or game one at least.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, special for Cardinals talking the weather. Let's move on and talk about the final segment. Cardinals Chiefs, what to expect to see, what are predictions, our preview. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals face the Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs, this coming weekend. What are we to expect? If there is one matchup that I am more excited to watch more than anything else, that would be Travis Kelce against Isaiah Simmons, because Travis Kelce is, if not the best, he is the second best tight end in the NFL. And Isaiah Simmons is the guy that the Cardinals drafted to handle players like Kelce, and appears to be set to be a great defensive player this year. So that is the matchup that I want to see most. And partially because if in fact Simmons can limit Kelce, we'll have to see what that Chiefs offense looks like if they don't get anything they want with Kelce.
Yeah, and I mean, he's such a dynamic, key to the game type of player, so it's just tough to stop him. And like you said, that's the point of Isaiah Simmons. You know, it's obviously also super unfair to put it all on Isaiah Simmons, right?
Right. But, I mean, but if he can limit, so if he can make Kelce, like if Kelce doesn't have a monster game, then we get to see what sort of the offensive plan is. Because the receivers that they acquired were less down the field and more middle of the field possession guys that will help move the sticks, but aren't necessarily going to give them the big explosive plays that Tyreek Hill could give you.
Yeah, and so you look at it, I'm interested in what the Cardinals get from from Marquise Brown, you know, and his debut. We didn't see him at all during open practice. Shocking.
It's almost like they planned that.
Yeah, and then obviously the preseason he wasn't even around. And then you throw in, I am excited to see what Zaven Collins and how he matches up with that Chiefs offensive line in their run game.
Totally. Very intrigued to see how the receivers are employed for the Cardinals. As if you, we wondered this whole time. And the depth chart, if this is going to be of any sort of revelation, any sort of clue, is they actually have Rondell Moore listed as the DeAndre Hopkins X receiver, and they have Marquise Brown Hollywood listed as their number one slot guy. Been wondering, because the Cliff has actually said about both, that Rondell Moore was going to have the Christian Kirk role, and he also kind of mentioned the same thing about Hollywood Brown after he was drafted. And so maybe we're going to see both playing inside and out. It appears A.J. Green will continue his role in as the Z on the other side of the field, but I'm very interested to see how they use the receivers. And you know how Rondell Moore's role was a year ago, whether they use Greg Dortch to do that or whether they use their running backs to do that, as you know, Benjamin and Darrell Williams are co-number twos on the depth chart. Offensively, I'm super excited about what happens because I'm not super convinced that this Chiefs defense will be ready or capable to keep up with the Cardinals' offense. The problem is the Cardinals have holes on defense, and they're thin at cornerback. You've got questions at the pass rush, and you're going against Patrick Mahomes. And so this game could have all the points.
Yeah, and that's going to be what's interesting is are the Cardinals going to be able to keep up? You know, they've done so in the past in game ones. You know, they're 2-0-1. I think people underestimate the length of time and preparation for game planning for game one, and how much you're able to really scheme out stuff more. So we'll see how that works out. This is a great first test because you assume that outside of Buffalo, Kansas City is probably, what, the number two team in the AFC right now?
I mean, they're definitely one of the top teams. They're automatically a Super Bowl contender or a Super Bowl favorite. With Patrick Mahomes doing what he does.
Yeah, so I mean, outside of Buffalo and Cincy, because I guess we keep them respected right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be one of the best AFC teams, so you got to, you know, like Justin and I preached, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, and they certainly have the opportunity to do that first and foremost in game one.
How much do you think the Cardinals will have to surprise Mahomes? Like, how much new do we think we're going to see from the defense and offense, honestly?
I mean, the biggest thing is I don't know what you're able to do that surprises Mahomes. Not that they won't try, but I'm just not sure if I think he's kind of at that point in his career where you probably can't do too much. Obviously, they got to get pressure, especially from the interior with JJ, and anytime they're blitzing, so he doesn't have time. And it'll be interesting, as you said earlier, to see what they look like without the potential explosive big play of Tyreek Hill. You know, that's my biggest question is, like, is this offense still going to be as great? It's just going to be great in a less explosive, like, big play, 75-yard, 80-yard passes, or is it going to be philosophically different until they're able and confident in the new kind of passing game with guys that, I mean, obviously Mecole Hardman's very fast, but he has not shown to be dynamic like Tyreek Hill. Whereas, you know, these other guys, and you look at them, you're not worried at this point. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster is a really, really solid possession kind of slot, big slot receiver. Sammy Watkins has four good games a year. let's hope one of them's not against the Cardinals, right?
Right, absolutely. Then you got special teams. How confident are you in the kicking game entering with Matt Prater? I mean, obviously the preseason leaves you with questions, but I think for me, from what we saw last season, when it came to having his battery of guys, Matt Prater could be completely relied upon. In fact, that you feel like it's almost automatic.
Yeah, and I'm not, I mean, you always go into the regular season with a little concern just because, and again, we talked about Russ Wilson's age. Like, Prater is what, 38, 39-ish?
Yeah, I think he's 38 this year.
Yeah, and so, like, same thing with kickers. Like, they do hit a wall, and when they hit the wall, it goes down fast. But it wasn't for lack of leg strength that Prater was struggling the preseason. Just seemed like he hadn't taken enough swings. You know, it's like kicking's kind of like golf. You got to hit the ball consistently and purely to be able to.
And apparently, he's got a process that he goes through.
Right. So.
So who knows? Who knows? Prediction time. My prediction is, and it changes without Ertz and Golden, but when I wrote for Sports Weekly for USA Today, that comes out in print on Wednesday, you can find it, you know, convenience stores, you know, grocery stores, I think. But I had the Cardinals eking out the win. I see this as a shootout. And with the Cardinals getting a last-second field goal to win 37-35, I am less confident in that if we're missing Golden and or Ertz, because they're two of the most important players on either side of the ball. If they don't play, I think it's a 35-27 Chiefs win, but it's closer than that. They pull away at the end to make it, you know, the good old backdoor cover in terms of that sense.
Yeah, and I would agree. And, you know, I'm going to take the Chiefs to win just because of the uncertainty right now, 34-30. So I think they win. I think it's going to be a close game. You know, if everybody for the Cardinals that can be healthy is healthy, I do think the Cardinals will win this game.
All right. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Yeah, we're now at the schedule where we'll be back weekly talking about the game that happened and looking forward to the game that's coming up. So we move into our regular season format. So we'll be back again next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jesser. This is the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up C-Red.